Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. We're recording this episode on Tuesday, March 8th, 2016, just after 5:41 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 68th episode of the show. For more information on how to subscribe to the podcast, please visit theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. This podcast is supported by listener donations through our page on Patreon. If you enjoy the program and you'd like to chip in a dollar or more to help support the production of future episodes, please visit patreon.com/astrologypodcast. In this episode, I'm going to be talking with astrologer Nick Diggin Best about the famous astrologer Joan Quigley and her relationship with Ronald and Nancy Reagan, as well as the Reagan's use of astrology. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again, Chris.
All right. As usual, excited to be doing this topic. The genesis of the topic, though, I guess we should back up and start from the beginning, is sort of on a sad note, which is that on Sunday, just a couple of days ago, on March 6th, Nancy Reagan, a former first lady, died at her home, just a few days ago. And so it's been covered a lot in the media, and there's a number of obituaries that were printed. The first one that I read was actually in the New York Times, and it was actually a really interesting and touching obituary that I'll link to in the notes for this episode. And one of the things that it, of course, touched upon is her use of astrology, since that became one of the big sort of media stories while she was in the White House. And specifically, I was surprised that they used in the New York Times obituary, even though it was otherwise a pretty nice piece, I was surprised that they used the official story where the way that they described it in just a few paragraphs was almost as if she only turned to astrology after the assassination attempt on her husband that took place on March 30th of 1981. And I thought that was kind of weird because she's known to have used astrology prior to that time. And really this story about her only using it in the aftermath of her husband's attempted assassination was part of the narrative or the damage control that the White House put out in the aftermath of when the story broke that they were using astrology in 1988. So I actually wanted to do a show to talk about that and to explore, you know, what actually happened and what we know in terms of the Reagan's use of astrology, and in particular, the astrologer who wrote a book about it after the fact named Joan Quigley. So, yeah. So how do you feel? Were you sort of aware? One of the problems for me is I wasn't, I was kind of around, but not around. I was only like a few years old when this story broke. So were you sort of cognizant of what was going on at that point in the 80s?
Yes, I was 19 years old. I was quite politically aware for my age, and I certainly remember the story coming out at the time. In fact, in the spring of 1988, I was the news editor for my college paper. So I was especially attuned to what was going on in the news because I was sort of pretending to be a journalist, as it were.
Nice.
but I remember the story. I was still 7 years away from discovering astrology myself. I think much of the population, this was sort of a quaint story and a chance to, you know, kick a little sand in the president's face. And not really much thought was given to it after that. It sort of lived on in infamy. But there were a lot of things about the Reagan presidency that had that kind of quirky tone to it, and this was just something in that sea of news stories, I think. And it was only later, when I started studying astrology, that I read Joan Quigley's book out of curiosity, and the notion of an astrologer having that level of influence on a head of state became just more and more of an intriguing idea and something I wanted to know more about. And obviously it's in keeping with a longer tradition. Joan Quigley was far from being the first person to advise a head of state on astrological grounds.
Sure.
So there's also that appeals to me as well, that fascinates me as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, where it used to be a much more common thing, and that was one of the things that was so weird or almost so striking about it, that it's 1988, it's the modern period, we're in the 20th century, and there's a president evidently using astrology to some extent to time events while in the White House. So maybe we should back up a bit and sort of set the stage by outlining the story and the controversy as it happened, sort of starting in May of 1988. So what happens is that in early May of 1988, the media starts talking about this new book that was about to come out by Ronald Reagan's former White House chief of staff, whose name annoyingly was Donald Reagan, which is, you can sort of confuse her. Reagan.
Yeah, the news was funny in those days for that very reason.
Yeah, so Ronald Reagan's former White House chief of staff is about to release this tell-all book that comes out later in May of 1988. But in early May, sort of excerpts from it start getting dropped. And one of the big stories that the media ran with, and it's one of the things that he does open up the book with, is this revelation that the president's wife, Nancy Reagan, regularly consults with an astrologer from San Francisco, and that through those consultations, the astrologer is feeding the first lady dates, and is those dates are being used in order to time things using electional astrology for when the president should do a bunch of different things, including taking trips and giving speeches and possibly interacting with other heads of state and all sorts of different things. And this story becomes this sort of media firestorm where a bunch of magazines like Time Magazine and People Magazine and stuff are running front page stories that there's an astrologer in the White House or that astrology is running the White House and different things like that. So you sort of generally were aware of that happening at the time, or that was a big thing?
Oh, yeah. It was a massive story at the time. And keep in mind, there's a backdrop to all this, because in May of 1988, the country's already been going through the Iran-Contra scandal, which was just this massive, controversy involving a lot of people in Reagan's administration. And there were televised hearings, and there was all this stuff going on. Then the Black Monday on Wall Street happened in late 1987, so also the economy shaking. But meanwhile, Reagan and Gorbachev are really coming to the peak of all their peace talks, which began in Reykjavik, and by the end of 87, they have a summit in Washington. And in May of 88, like right when Donald Reagan's book comes out, is when Reagan goes to Moscow and signs this big treaty. I mean, it's the peak of a sort of resolution between, an ending of the Cold War, if you will, at least in terms of the gestures of goodwill between the United States and Soviet Union. Reagan speaks at Moscow State University, May 31st, 88. That, it's the same time that that's coming out, and the nuclear arms talks, anti-nuclear treaties that are being signed. So this is a huge time, huge time. And so this book comes out at this peculiar period of great fall and great triumph. Reagan's literally in the middle of both of those in his presidency. And so that's the backdrop that I think is important to note. And it was very close to the end. I mean, by May 1988, his vice president, George Bush, is already campaigning and well in the lead to be the candidate, the Republican candidate in the 88 election. These are lame duck years. The book couldn't really hurt Reagan politically. So it was just one of these things that was sort of a side story to all this other big stuff going on with his presidency at the time.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. This is literally in the last like 6 months, the last year of his presidency. We're almost like if two months from now will be in May of 2016. So it's basically exactly where Obama is right now, where he's been in the White House for 7 years, and he's on his way out practically in the last year of the presidency. And then this book drops, and the title of the book was For the Record, From Wall Street to Washington. And it was partially kind of like payback or something, because Reagan, the chief of staff, had been fired. And the official story, and if you look up like his Wikipedia biography or something like that, officially they say that it was due to his handling of the Iran-Contra affair, which, as you said, had just taken place. But behind the scenes, it seems like in reality, it turned out that it may have been much more to do with some of the conflicts that he had with Nancy Reagan and her controlling the president and the White House's schedule based on some of the astrological information she was getting from this astrologer. And while some of the previous White House chiefs of staff had sort of gone along with it and been all right with it, this chief of staff who was in the White House from 1985 to 1987 was not. And he initially in the book seems kind of, you know, perplexed or surprised and kind of annoyed. But then as time progresses, he says that this became one of the most frustrating things that he ever had to deal with in his 45-year career in any field, was the having to schedule and reschedule or alter schedules based on you know, the astrological advice that was being given to the First Lady. So the press had a field day with this story, became a huge media sensation. The Reagans were roundly sort of mocked and criticized, especially by the scientific and skeptical communities, but also even by the religious communities, where many religious communities, you know, many Christian denominations think that astrology is not something that's okay on religious grounds. So they sort of get critiqued on both ends from both the scientific and the religious communities.
That is the unique space that we occupy as astrologers. It's like the one subject that can unite those two otherwise very splintered groups, the religious fanatics and then the, you know, hardcore so-called skeptics.
Right. It's a lovely position to be in society. I think we've talked about a few times before.
Yeah.
So the White House, of course, is forced to release a statement on whether or not these rumors are true, the accusations are true. And the White House does, early in May, end up confirming that indeed astrology is used for, to some extent, for scheduling purposes, but they emphasize that it does not affect their policy decisions in any way. And so the press is going crazy because now the White House has confirmed it. And initially in the book by the White House chief of staff, he didn't know who the astrologer was. He just knew it was Nancy's astrologer and that she was from San Francisco. And so he never mentions his name because he didn't know who she is in the book, which is really interesting given that he's the White House chief. He's literally the guy in charge of the White House. But the press very quickly identifies the astrologer and is able to figure out who it is. And they identify it as this San Francisco-based astrologer, Joan Quigley. And the press, Joan Quigley's away on a vacation when this story first comes out, and she flies back and then gets swarmed by the press. And she's completely unprepared for this. And at least according to Nancy, says a little bit more than she probably should have when confronted with all of these questions about whether she's the astrologer that's working for the White House. So it becomes this huge controversy, especially in May of 88, but it seems like it lingers even longer than that over maybe even over the next few months. I mean, maybe the news cycle was a slightly slower back then than it is today, where news stories seem to have like a 24-hour sort of burn rate sometimes.
Keep in mind, people really only started watching CNN as a sort of part of the culture with the Gulf War in 1991. So this is still an era when network TV, but people really do watch the 6 o'clock news at dinner still, for the most part.
Right. And there's, and all of them, like NBC, ABC, all of the major news networks are sort of covering this and investigating it.
Yeah.
I think Quigley does some interviews. But what happens is that, so by the end of the year, of course, we have the election of 1988. George Herbert Walker Bush wins and then subsequently in January becomes president. And in 1989, Nancy writes her memoir, and she publishes her memoir, which is titled My Turn. And very early on in the book, actually, in like the fourth chapter, something like page 44, she dedicates an entire chapter to the astrology controversy. And it's interesting because she She tries to frame the use of astrology largely as a reaction to the assassination attempt that occurred on her husband's life in 1981. And she uses terms like calling it an emotional crutch that eventually became a habit, and sort of in some ways, or in some parts of that chapter, frames it in kind of a negative way as like a shortcoming that she knew was perhaps not good for her, but that she gave into out of fear or something like that. And she kind of goes back and forth between framing it in that way versus and sort of downplaying astrology in some sense, and maybe even downplaying her belief in it. But then on the other hand, she'll sometimes go back in the other direction and sort of defend it a little bit and say that she didn't see what the big deal was, and that in the Hollywood culture that her and her husband came out of, that that's kind of what you did, and that you consulted your horoscope and stuff, and it didn't necessarily mean that you believed in it or would die trying to defend it or something like that. So she kind of waffles back and forth, but for the most part tries to push this narrative that it was only something, or was largely something, that was done in that 7 years between 1981 and 1988. She does acknowledge, however, very briefly, prior interactions with Joan Quigley before 1981, but she kind of downplays them and says she says, I guess I met her, you know, this year, but I don't really remember it very well. And also alleges or says that her husband wasn't really aware of her use of astrology to some extent, but that he was made aware of it, or she made him aware of it later at some point, but she doesn't specify when.
Right.
So there's this whole sense of like ambiguity and kind of downplaying a little bit and kind of doing damage control. Because even though, you know, they're out of the White House at this point, they're still in that stage of the presidency where, you know, the president or presidential families sometimes think about what their legacy is, or how people will think of their presidency in retrospect, perhaps.
It's certainly that felt like it at the time, and still does, because the regardless of whether it's true or not, there's something just sort of tone perfect about Nancy's response. It seems very political, playing on the anxiety of having one's loved one be in physical danger like that,
right.
Which is something that anyone can empathize with, or sympathize with, rather, pretty easily. So that may be the actual truth, but given this, what turns out to be, what we both suspect is a much longer and more detailed involvement in astrology than she was claiming, this just adds to the sense that this is kind of, you know, probably disingenuous, or that there's something being covered up or downplayed.
Sure. Yeah. And that, I mean, evidently ended up being the way it came across to Joan Quigley, the astrologer herself who consulted with Nancy all those years, because then what happens is, so Nancy's book comes out in 1989, and then a year later, Joan Quigley publishes her own book. And so the astrologer writes her own book titled, What Does Joan Say? My 7 years as White House astrologer to Nancy and Ronald Reagan. And in the book, what she says that she's going to do is she wants to sort of set the record straight on what she did or didn't do for the Reagans. And she specifically says in the opening that she wrote it in reaction to Nancy's book, because she calls Nancy's book essentially inaccurate and quote unquote evasive. So what she does is she gives a detailed account of her relationship and her work with the Reagans. So that's sort of the backdrop to the story in terms of the sequence of events, in terms of the chronology of this controversy and how it exploded over this few year period from like 1988 through 1990. And that sets up a bunch of different questions and different points of contention that are still debated or still speculated about today. And that's what I think we'll spend the rest of this episode talking about.
Mm.
So one of the questions is, how long had Quigley been working for the Reagans? Because this becomes a point of contention, and that's actually the genesis of this episode, because in the official obituary for Nancy Reagan, it basically makes it look like Joan Quigley just came in 1981 after the assassination attempt and that she only worked for the Reagans during that time period, and that it was sort of a crutch or something that Nancy gave into as sort of a shortcoming that her husband then sort of, you know, humored her about, or not even humored her, but I'm trying to think of the correct term, but it's
indulged.
Yeah, that's the term that gets used a lot, is indulged, that Reagan indulged his wife about the astrology thing. And
right.
One of the points that right away contradicts that, and one of the things that came out in Quigley's book that she tried to address, is that was actually false, that narrative that, you know, their interactions were limited to that 7-year period was false, because she says, and Nancy actually acknowledges this in the book, because she knows that the press already realizes that she had prior interactions with Quigley in the 1970s and in 1980, but Joan Quigley outlines it very explicitly, saying that they first met on the set of the Merv Griffin show in 1973, or through the Merv Griffin show, I should say, that Quigley says that Nancy was a client from 1973 through 1976, at least, and that she first met Nancy in person, actually, in 1976. So their relationship was sort of extensive enough. Their sort of client astrologer relationship was extensive enough that even though they were previously doing consultations on the phone, they actually met in person in 1976. Both Joan Quigley and Nancy Reagan in her book acknowledge that Quigley had done some work for them during the 1980 presidential campaign. So Joan Quigley says that she wasn't really involved until after the Republican National Convention that occurred in July of 1980. Mm-hmm. But that one of the main things that she did, which is extremely interesting, is that she helped to select either the date or just the time for the presidential debate with Carter. So Carter is the current sitting president, and what you have is Ronald Reagan in October challenging them, and they're in the middle of a heated race. And it's not like today where they have like 3 or 4 different debates. There was only one presidential debate that took place in the 1980 campaign, and it took place in October.
Yeah, that's half true. There was an independent candidate named John Anderson, and Reagan debated him on September 21st, 1980. Carter at that point was still refusing to debate Reagan, and it was only like he was compelled to because Reagan went ahead and debated this other guy, John Anderson. But indeed, it was only on October 28th, 1980, that the one and only debate between Reagan and Carter occurred. That's when Reagan had his famous line, "There you go again." That was kind of the beginning of the end for Carter, although Carter was already having a pretty rough time with his presidency. I remember that debate quite well, and it was pretty clear from that night on that Reagan was definitely going to win, I think.
Sure. Well, and one of the interesting historical things behind that then is that Quigley says that she picked an electional chart for that debate specifically in order to help increase the odds that Reagan would win and would come out successful. But one of the interesting things that she details in her book in terms of what her methodology was is kind of interesting, and she acknowledges that it was a little bit unorthodox or a little bit weird, but or non-standard. But she says that what she did was she tried to, at least she had a rationale for it, an astrological rationale. She says that she tried to emphasize the grand trine in Carter's chart because of the normal sort of typical like mid-20th century modern idea that grand trines are positive, but that sometimes they can make the native like lazy because they don't have the pressure that's involved in like a square or an opposition.
Right.
So she claims that she tried to emphasize the grand trine in his chart because she thought it would make him lax and overconfident, and that as a result of that, he would slip up. Mm. And then she at least tries to claim that that's exactly what happened when some statement was made. But in terms of what the actual effects are, that's kind of, you know, perhaps up for debate or what have you.
Right.
But generally speaking, Reagan did come out of that debate looking much better, and then did go on to win the presidency just a few weeks later.
Yeah.
So
pretty much a week later, I think it was more or less 7 days before the election. It was very, very shortly before the election.
Right. So, but one of the points here is that already Joan Quigley is doing some work for Nancy Reagan and by extension for Ronald Reagan in, you know, 1980, long before the assassination attempt. So the assassination attempt does take place in 1981, and both of them do seem to acknowledge that their work together ramped up after the assassination attempt. So it's probably true to some extent that there's some level where that's true. And given the sort of way that Nancy and Ronald Reagan's relationship is often characterized, which is being, you know, very, very close, you know, there probably is some truth to that, that Nancy was, you know, deeply affected by the near death of her husband, and perhaps would have been more willing to sort of focus on doing whatever she could to avoid that in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's only the emphasizing her fear after the assassination and implying that it was only that drove her to seek astrological advice, when clearly there was a prior relationship, a prior astrological relationship between the two women. I think that's really the point of disingenuity that we're talking about, and I don't doubt at all. I mean, anyone who saw Nancy's reaction when Ronald Reagan died knows that she obviously deeply loved the man, and I'm sure that was a distressing thing.
Sure. So from that point, somewhere after that, from 1981, they worked together very closely for the next seven years, and then the last time that Joan Quigley and Nancy Reagan talked, or at least had a consultation, supposedly was in April of 1988, which is basically right before the media broke the story.
Right.
So that's one question sort of addressed. How long had Quigley been working for the Reagans, at least since the mid-1970s and definitely by 1980? Next question that is sort of relevant in terms of this overall saga is, had the Reagans used astrology in the past? So were there other instances aside from the interactions with Quigley or the things that she documented in her book, which largely pertain to his time in the White House in the 1980s, were there other instances prior to that when they had used astrology? And one of the most interesting ones and one of the most notable ones that shows up earlier in Ronald Reagan's career is when he became governor of California in 1967. He may have used astrology in order to time his inauguration. So the inauguration was apparently delayed and held at a weird time at 12:10 a.m. on January 2nd, 1967.
I actually have 12:14 a.m. from the Reagan Library, but that's only a 4-minute detail. And indeed, it is pretty weird to inaugurate someone into office around midnight, isn't it?
Yeah, around midnight, or that even if it was midnight, there was some statement that even if it was going to be midnight, they delayed another 9, or in your case, 13, 14 minutes, so that it wasn't even like right at the stroke of midnight. It was at this weird time, you know, even slightly after that. So the New York Times in some later articles says that news reports at the time speculated that this was due to astrology, that there was already speculation in 1967 that this weird inauguration time is being motivated by astrological considerations. And even his executive secretary, Ronald Reagan's executive secretary at the time, had to address these rumors by saying, quote unquote, he does not believe in astrology. He is not guided by the stars. So this is really interesting, and because they're already being accused of, and they're doing things at weird times much earlier in his career, and then later, of course, they continued to do things at weird times or sometimes adjust and shift times for different things, but then it came out that he actually was using an astrologer in the later instances. And one of the things when I was talking to Christopher Renstrom about this recently, because he's also researched this issue and he did some interviews with Joan Quigley, and I really appreciated talking with him about, you know, sort of his perspective on this and some of the information and research he did. But one of the things that he pointed out was just the cultural context of Ronald Reagan picking an electional chart in 1967, and how, for example, it was only a year later in 1968 that you have Linda Goodman's book on sun signs coming out and then being the highest selling astrology book of all time. So that really gives you some idea of the cultural context of astrology being practiced, especially in, you know, in California in this time period in the mid to late 1960s.
Sure. I mean, they were from old Hollywood, which, you know, I'm reminded of Gloria Swanson in Sunset Boulevard making references to having an astrologer. I mean, there's the astrology in Hollywood have this old sort of tradition that apparently continues right to this very day, thanks to Megan Fox this week. I think that's where we're going with this. The Reagan's exposure to Hollywood, their early exposure, their pre-Linda Goodman, pre-Dane Rudyard. Well, I guess it's not pre-Dane Rudyard, but they're the phenomenon that he was in the 60s, that they were into it before any of that became sort of culturally and obviously before Hair and the song, Age of Aquarius.
Right.
They're before any of that became a big sensation.
Right, and that's because, and, just in terms of background, because they're both actors, and that's sort of how they met.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they met, he was the head of the, their meeting story is kind of funny. He was the president of the Screen Actors Guild. Her name was Nancy Davis, and there was another actress named Nancy Davis who was on the blacklist of communists, and so... this Nancy Davis, our Nancy Davis, contacted the president of the Screen Actors Guild to make sure that he knew that she wasn't the Nancy Davis who was a communist. I know, it's really romantic. Right. Anyway, they met.
It's like they met. Her introduction is literally, "I'm not a communist, and please
yes.
take me off the blacklist."
Yes. which, you know. I mean, if there's one way to capture Ronald Reagan's heart, it's to tell him you're not a communist, I guess. But yeah, something began not long after that. They had a fling. I do know she got pregnant and they got married because she was pregnant. That's one of the details if you, but he was already divorced and, you know, and obviously it was a perfect match.
Sure. Yeah, so they're both actors at that point, and then they're kind of, it seems like, struggling actors for a little bit. But one of the things that's interesting is they're in Hollywood, and in Hollywood there was this astrologer, and maybe this would be a good time to mention this and to sort of segue into the next section, which is other astrologers prior to Joan Quigley.
Yeah.
So there was this very famous astrologer named Carol Ryder, who was a sun sign columnist that started a column starting, I think, in like 1950 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol Ryder actually and one of the things that's documented is you can already see him being aware of and perhaps having interactions with the Reagans as early as 1952, because he mentions Nancy Davis, or who was still Nancy Davis, I think, at that time, in 1952 column, saying that she was like a rising star or something like that, and mentioning some things about her chart.
Mm.
So Carol Ryder is this famous sun sign columnist. He has lots of celebrity clients in Hollywood, and he has this initial perhaps interaction with the Reagans while they're still actors.
Mm-hmm.
And in his 1965 autobiography, Ronald Reagan actually referred to Carol Ryder, to this famous astrologer. And he's not known, I mean, he's known as a socialite and for throwing great parties and stuff like that. But he is an astrologer, and it's not like he's something else. Mm. He's definitely just a prominent astrologer in Hollywood. And Ronald Reagan refers to him in 1965 as a quote-unquote good friend. And at the same time, in the same autobiography, confirmed that him and Nancy regularly even read his column and his writings, saying that, quote unquote, every morning Nancy and I turn to see what he has to say about people of our respective birth signs. So they're sort of religiously reading this guy's sun sign column every morning in the newspaper. And supposedly, you know, later reports would say that that would be the first thing that Ronald Reagan would read in the newspaper in the mornings.
Right.
So,
but they're also partying with him at cocktail parties in the evening. So there's a full involvement.
Right. And some later, sort of there's pictures of the Reagans with Carol Ryder, and then supposedly he had a Carol Ryder, the astrologer, had a picture of himself with the Reagans sitting on his piano at his house. Mm. So there was some sort of close connection there, and it's like in some later sources this gets downplayed in terms of Reagan's acknowledgement in that 1965 autobiography that he read his sun sign column every morning. This gets downplayed, where some later sources try to say that he was just doing that for fun, or that he didn't take it seriously or whatever. But that's really not the way that it comes off, the way that he writes it here. And this is also only a year or two, of course, before he writes that autobiography in 1965. And then 2 years later, in 1967, we have that incident where he becomes governor of California, and then, you know, sets the inauguration at this really weird time at 12:10 or 12:14 in the morning.
Yeah.
So People Magazine, when the story broke in 1988 about Reagan using astrology, People Magazine did a really interesting piece where it interviewed a bunch of people. And that article from like May of 88 suggested that it was probably Carol Ryder, who was always very focused on timing and timing things astrologically, who might have been behind the inauguration chart in 1967 that was at that weird time in the night. So Ryder was definitely connected with them and generally thought to be one of the primary astrologers they were consulting for much of the 1960s and 70s. One of the odd little factoids, though, that really blows my mind is that Carol Ryder actually died on April 30th, 1988, which is exactly when the Ronald Reagan astrology story broke in the media.
I know. It's a really bizarre time for him to go. And right when, boy, could we have used his insight during the ensuing controversy. He might have been able to shed some light on some otherwise dark areas of our story.
Right. And well, perhaps, but even it's like his agent or somebody was approached, and the agent said, you know, neither I nor my client never give out any details about clientele. And that's actually one of the things that's interesting, is you wonder if we would have any additional details, or if Carol Ryder would have been more circumspect about it. Because that's one of the weird things here that's perhaps worth talking about later at some point, is the sort of like astrologer-client relationship and how some aspects of that ended up getting violated here by Quigley, which becomes one of the interesting and sort of debatable points about the sort of morality of what Quigley did in writing a tell-all book about it, where it's like, from her perspective, I guess she's trying to set the record straight because she thinks that the true story is being downplayed, or perhaps even that she's being defamed, because Nancy does make this sort of offhanded, but still reads as kind of a weird statement that she thought that Joan Quigley would just do the work for free, like she did during the 1980 campaign. But then it turned out that wasn't the case. And that while Nancy says that while she's not going to reveal what she paid the astrologer any more than she'd reveal what she paid her doctor, that it wasn't cheap or something like that.
Right.
And so she sort of almost implies that the astrologer was making really good money as part of this narrative of almost making it almost look like she was being taken advantage of in a moment of weakness, perhaps.
Yeah.
And that becomes, I think, part of what Joan Quigley reacted very strongly to and responded to by writing the book. But nonetheless, there is this sort of lingering question there about whether it was appropriate for her to have spoken so openly about the relationship she had with the Reagans.
Definitely. Whenever I've talked about this story with other astrologers over the past 20 years, that is the point that everyone brings up. Because any of us, should we ever find ourselves in a similar predicament, could probably do better. My feelings on the matter, not that they you know, are by any means law, is that it's really it's the astrologer's responsibility to fall on their sword in those situations. But I suppose sometimes, you know, the threat of total ruin can be so daunting that, you know, you can certainly understand why she would be compelled to write the book.
Sure. I mean, I guess it really depends. I don't fully understand what her motivations were, so I guess I can't say. But they're certainly from some of the ethical guidelines that have been adopted by, you know, the NCGR and ESAR and the other major astrological organizations in the past 10 or 20 years. I think she would be probably in violation of some of those ethical guidelines, and therefore probably kicked out of some of those organizations by doing something like this, unless she had a really good reason to, I guess, if she was being defamed or something like that.
Yeah, it's touch and go. I mean, it's definitely a situation that no other astrologer in our day and age has found themselves in, not in our culture anyway. So it's hard for anyone else to really judge her on you know, in one sense, because it's not an ordinary case. That being said, in terms of the general rule of thumb is that this is a pretty gross violation of any sort of ethical principles that astrologers could or should be operating under.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the points that's interesting is that it's not like she was against them politically or I even think personally, because she herself was a Republican, and she was like a very active sort of supporter of them politically and of other Republicans politically. She came from like a wealthy family, and I think inherited a lot of money, and went to like Vassar College and was well educated and had a degree in like art history, mm-hmm. But then decided to pursue astrology. But she otherwise was like very much, it seemed like, politically aligned with the Reagans, and therefore it wasn't like it was a hit piece or something like that. Some later works, like I read this one book that deals with the question of Reagan and astrology, and it kind of criticizes Quigley as puffing up her own role in the White House at the time. And there's like some level where when you read the book, you can see that a little bit, where she's telling you what she did, and you can kind of see the astrological rationale, and you can see what she thinks she's doing and why she thinks she's doing it. But at the same time, she definitely gives off this kind of air of not like superiority, but of like coming from like a high class sort of background. I don't know how to explain that.
There's definitely what I remember. You've probably been watching more of her interviews and what have you. The one interview I remember from back in the 80s showed her being very defensive about astrology, insisting it's scientific and what have you. I mean, it does look like she's just like been caught off guard while walking home in this interview. So I wouldn't take her too much to task. But it's sort of, a defensiveness, which is, I think, similar to what you're describing there, like a need to justify her, you know, her role in all this.
Yeah, and that may have actually been, maybe that was it, and maybe that was her primary motivation, because that is something that comes through very clearly in her book, but it's also something that Nancy kind of wants to press, a point that Nancy wants to press as well, which is, It seems like almost the way the press dealt with the astrology thing was like, as far as they're concerned, that like voodoo was being done in the White House, or that just, you know, crazy stuff. And I remember even now, even, you know, decades later, it's still kind of this generic joke about Nancy being into weird metaphysical or like occult stuff. So there's this clip you can find online of Obama from 2009, and he's asked some question as they're like moving into the White House or something like that. And he says that he's not going to do anything crazy like Nancy Reagan in the White House, or that he's not going to hold a seance or something like that. Ah. And so you know, she wasn't holding seances in the White House. She was consulting an astrologer. But it's like, in terms of the public perception, it was worked up into this big thing about just crazy occult stuff going on in the White House. And that, I guess, is partially what Joan Quigley was trying to address with her book and with her openness with the media, was that there was this legitimate, well-educated person from a you know, high class or higher, what's the term, sort of family background, that did astrology, that had was very professional about it, and that it was much more complicated and much more, you know, what she would probably try and characterize as like scientific than what people thought it was, just in terms of sun signs or horoscope columns or something like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, so she had different motivations, and I don't know how we got on that track, but backing up a little bit. So it's like Carol Ryder dies right when this is the same day. I think one of the articles I read said that literally the first story about this that was the starting point for the entire thing breaking in the media also came out on April 30th. So he may have actually died what was essentially possibly the Reagan's first astrologer died the day that the story started to break. So that's weird.
Well, he died of cancer, but who knows? Maybe he saw the newspaper headline that morning and it just sort of, you know, finished him.
Sure. Yeah. Either way, that's tough. So even aside from him, there was another astrologer. In 1966, the astrologer / psychic / number of other things, Jean Dixon, predicted on the Mike Douglas show that Reagan would be president. And in the expose that came out in 1988 from the White House chief of staff in Don Regan's book, he actually said he asserted that the Reagans had used to consult with Jean Dixon starting around the time that he was governor. So around the 1960s, around 1966, 1967. But then at some point she lost favor with them and they stopped consulting with her.
Hmm.
So Jean Dixon, according to Regan in his book, was another astrologer they consulted with, at least in the 1960s. And that actually makes sense because she is documented to have made this prediction that Reagan would be president in 1966 on national television. And that wouldn't have, you know, escaped the notice of at least of Nancy, if not others. And then it's, of course, only a year later that Reagan actually does is inaugurated and has that weird inauguration chart for when he becomes governor.
Indeed. And do you know what else, besides having done astrology for the Reagans, do you know what else Jean Dixon and Joan Quigley have in common?
The teacher?
Natal Jupiter at 1819 Pisces, where tonight's eclipse, as you and I speak, happens to be happening.
Nice. That is an eclipse that's going exact almost about now, actually.
Right as we speak, exactly. And Carol Ryder had the moon at 19 Pisces right on his descendant. So all these astrologers and psychics of the past that we're conjuring this evening are deeply tied to the eclipse that's currently happening. And I, for one, am amused by that.
Very good. It all makes sense. Yeah, and there's other connections because, like, I think Carol Ryder, one of his teachers, or at least somebody he got a consultation with, was Evangeline Adams. And then Evangeline Adams, of course, has some connections to past political stuff, or at least she's supposedly actually a descendant of John Adams.
Yeah, that may be apocryphal.
Yeah, may not be true. Okay. Yeah, so Jean Dixon is one who's alleged to have been a previous astrologer they worked with, and then Carol Ryder, of course, and their close connection with him. So that brings us to the next question, the sort of, which is still a lingering point of dispute, which is the question, did Ronald Reagan himself believe in astrology? And this is problematic, and I bring this up because a lot of the astrologers just take it for granted, like, yeah, of course, just the context of everything, or it's just assumed as general knowledge. But in fact, if you read, you know, some biographies on Reagan and things like that, sometimes it's not taken for granted. In fact, some of them, so for example, this book I was reading recently while researching this, titled God and Ronald Reagan by Paul Kengor. He has an entire chapter on the astrology issue, and he specifically, he really takes Nancy's line very seriously about putting it on Nancy, and especially putting it on her as something that she used as a crutch after the assassination attempt, and otherwise disputes that, and uses the line that it was that Ronald Reagan was humoring or indulging his wife, but that he himself otherwise didn't believe in it. And he specifically seems to push that point also in light of Reagan's Christian beliefs, somehow viewing those as like incompatible with astrology or something like that.
Right.
So this is actually a legitimate point of debate, especially since Joan Quigley herself was always consulting with Nancy. And so even to whatever extent, even if you want to say that Ronald Reagan was consulting and his career was being affected by the things that Nancy was passing off to him, you have to acknowledge that Nancy was always the intermediary, so that there's some ambiguity sort of inherently underlying this question.
Yeah.
So part of the damage control in the late 80s is that Nancy takes all the credit for this. In her memoir, In My Turn, published in 1989, she says that Reagan was unaware of the astrology thing, but then eventually she told him, and he said, okay, but be careful, since some people would be upset and wouldn't understand if it got out. You know, she doesn't specify when that supposedly, like when she had told him that she was doing this, so it's left ambiguous, because that means it could be, you know, any time during that 7 years in the White House, or it could have been sometime long before that. It's not specified. And that's one of the things then that Quigley kind of refers to when she says that Nancy's account was kind of evasive or perhaps disingenuous. Mm. One of the things that I found interesting and kind of frustrating and perplexing in researching this over the past few years is that Ronald Reagan's diaries, he actually wrote a diary for every day that he was in the White House, starting on the day of his inauguration. And those diaries, an edited version of them, were published in 2009. And he actually has entries for when the astrology story broke, starting May 3rd and May 4th of 1988. One of the things that's annoying about those is that he basically says, the press has a new story and they're running with it, but there's nothing to it. It's completely false. And they say that we've been consulting with some astrologer from Los Angeles, but we've never done that. And we have no idea who they're talking about, is basically what he writes in what's supposed to be his personal diary in theory.
Right. Kind of perplexing, isn't it?
So it's perplexing on a number of different levels, because there's all sorts of different things. You then have to come up with a rationale, a reason why that is, and there's a few different possibilities. I mean, one of them that I have to, you know, it's so incongruous with what was going on and with both their background as well as what Joan Quigley later detailed, that you almost wonder if, like, the first option is just that he's not being honest when he's writing this down in the diary. And one of the things, it's like, I don't want to accuse him of dishonesty, but the only reason that might make me think that that's true is because this is only like, what, 10 years after Nixon resigns because of the White House tapes, where he recorded everything that was going on in the White House and the Oval Office. And then as a result of that, basically was about to be impeached and then resigned. So I have to,
14 years. Yeah, 14 years after. So close enough. Pretty recent.
Yeah, I mean, from now, 14 years ago from this year, from 2016, is only what, like 2002. So that's relatively recent enough to remember, you know, that sometimes, you know, the things that you're doing, especially when you're documenting things on a day-to-day basis when you're the president, are going to get out there in the public. And so that's a question. I mean, this is kind of addressed by the editor of the diaries when he says that Ronald Reagan's extremely honest, even in instances where maybe he shouldn't be. And that kind of contradicts that theory a little bit, perhaps. Another possibility is whether the writings themselves are edited after the fact. Which then becomes another sort of sticky issue of like, well, you know, do you really want to accuse the editor or whoever of changing things after the fact? And he does say in the introduction that he did make some editorial changes or some omissions at Nancy's request, but he says that he's going to mark those with an ellipsis when he has to do so. And at least in this section, there do not appear to be any ellipses. So who knows, you know, if that's actually still a possibility.
Okay.
Other options, somebody else suggested to me, well, you know, what if he really didn't know at that point? Or is there any scenario? Because this comes to one of the other issues, which is, what was the extent to which he really did know that astrology was being used? And is there any scenario in which he really was that oblivious? And I find that really hard to believe based on the extent to which astrology was being used during his time in the White House, that he was completely oblivious about it. Somebody said maybe there's a scenario where sometimes there's still these debates or speculation about, you know, it was supposedly diagnosed and announced in 1994 that he had Alzheimer's.
Yeah, it was.
And then he, you know, really his condition deteriorated over the course of the next 10 years until he died in 2004. And sometimes people speculate about whether there wasn't any instances of that or whether that wasn't affecting him prior to that during the course of his presidency, although that's a very sort of sticky and sensitive topic. So that's one of the few scenarios though where maybe I could almost see if astrology is being used that much, but that he's completely unaware of it, that it would have to be something like that. But I still, even to that extent, I have a hard time sort of buying that.
Yeah, there were stories about him falling asleep during important meetings and, you know, forgetting some important details after he'd been briefed. But what we're suggesting here would be a lot more. That this would suggest that he was a lot more out of it this early on, 6 years before the actual diagnosis of Alzheimer's came about. So it is a tricky thing to say, and we can only speculate. He was old. Let's put it this way. He was the oldest man to hold that office at that point, if I'm not mistaken. He was definitely quite old, in his 70s. So, you know, there was just that. I mean, Alzheimer's or no Alzheimer's, he might have just, you know, gotten tired easier and lost his memory gradually. You know, some of it might have just been that.
Sure. But in terms of his awareness for like an entire 7 year period, because the underlying issue is just that when you take Quigley's actual documentation of what she says occurred to its fullest extent, like, a lot of things were being micromanaged using electional astrology in particular in the White House. And we'll get to what those specific things were here in just a few minutes. But if, you know, even half of those things were true, then there's major decisions that are being made and sometimes changed on that basis. And it seems like it would be very difficult for him to be unaware of that. And you'd almost have to, you'd have to like look at him much lesser, or you'd have to almost treat him as if he wasn't very intelligent in order to make that argument that he was completely oblivious to the extent to which things were being changed and manipulated based on astrology in order to make that argument. And furthermore, it doesn't make sense because it ultimately becomes one of the primary points of contention with his chief of staff, Don Regan, that leads to Regan firing his chief of staff, firing Don Regan, which is the whole thing that set this off. And Regan himself seems to think that one of the primary reasons for that is because of his clashes with Nancy over her constantly messing with the schedule based on astrology.
Yeah.
And he opens his book with that, basically, that accusation. So Regan would have to be, you know, even oblivious to the true reason why, you know, his chief of staff wasn't getting along well with his wife and with other things. Like, one of the things that we'll get to is like he nominated a Supreme Court justice at a specific time based on that. And then when you take into account, you know, the weird timing of when he was inaugurated governor 2 decades earlier, which is really, really stands out because it's being done at this really weird hour just after midnight. But also that's exactly the same type of thing then that Quigley was doing for them in the White House. So he would have had to have been oblivious to all of those things for 2 or 3 or 4 decades in a row, so that Nancy would have just, you'd practically have to paint her as somebody that was just really manipulating her husband, and that he was like almost an idiot in order to make that case. And I think it's a really difficult case to make, especially because the people often that are making that case are trying to do it in order to improve or defend his image. They're usually supporters that are saying that he didn't believe in astrology, but then by inference, you're making an argument that he was completely oblivious to how much it was being used.
Yeah, it's a sticky point. There's no easy way out for them. I think you're right. He's either a liar or an idiot, depending on which version of the story is true, or at least he can be seen that way.
Sure. Well, or at least as somebody that's just like any other modern politician, which is just very sensitive to how certain private beliefs can sometimes be perceived by the public, and how sometimes it's not politically or otherwise advantageous for people to know, you know, what you actually believe, if it's something that goes against contemporary or certain prevailing beliefs at the time, like the fact that astrology, if you believe in astrology, that puts you on the short end of the stick, both the scientific community as well as the religious community. It becomes imperative on you, especially if you're dealing with the public, where you might not want to be fully forward about that belief.
Yeah.
And that's the point. That's where, honestly, in the direction that I've gone with that, I think that that's where I tend to go, is I think what happened is that they were kind of cavalier about it in 1967 in taking whoever's advice it was, whether it was probably either Carol Ryder or maybe Gene Dixon's advice for the midnight 1967 California inauguration. And then it created a little mini sort of media controversy where their press director or whoever actually had to address it and say, it's not true, he doesn't believe in astrology. I think having that experience, they knew going forward that if they're going to continue to use it, that they'd have to do it very, you know, privately and very carefully, and that ultimately to have him shielded from it in some way and to have some sort of plausible deniability, which ultimately is what ends up happening, is that basically Nancy takes the fall for it. And one of the points that's really important that I think helps to clarify this in Quigley's book and to settle the matter, not definitively, but a little bit more definitively than we might have otherwise, is that Quigley says that there were actually a few points when Reagan specifically inquired about through Nancy. And one of the more important ones that stands out is in the immediate aftermath of the Challenger disaster, Nancy calls Joan saying, you know, Donald wants to know what to do and whether to hold.
You mean Ronald wants to know?
Yeah, Ronnie, not Donald. Ronald Reagan wants to know whether to hold a full investigation in the aftermath of the Challenger disaster and whether there was foul play at work or what to do. And so that becomes one specific point where it's really plausible. And I think unless you just dismiss Quigley as a liar, which I don't think it's necessary to do, because so much of what she says gets validated in Nancy's book and in the other book by the chief of staff, that's a point where I think it seems really obvious that Ronald Reagan is in on what's happening, and that in some instances, while Nancy may be like the driving force who's really obsessed with the astrology and maybe is using it a lot more now because she wants to protect her husband after the assassination attempt, there are instances where he's actually curious and he has Nancy contact the astrologer in order to get some insight into what's going on. So,
indeed.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's hard to say. I do think they saw it very clear. I mean, in 1988, it became such a huge media firestorm, and they were mocked so viciously and attacked so viciously about it that I think they did see that it was doing damage to his reputation towards the end of his presidency, and probably decided to keep it under wraps so that, you know, Nancy wrote her book, and that ends up being one of the final sort of PR statements about it. And that ended up being the one that, you know, in her obituary is the thing that gets the narrative that gets cited, is that it was largely on her and it wasn't something that he really believed in. Oh yeah. One other interesting one that's mentioned though, because then there's a question of, well, what do other people that were around during that time frame think? And in the book, God and Reagan, he actually, when he has this chapter where he's arguing against Reagan himself believing in astrology, he cites like interviews with three different associates who all say essentially that they never heard Reagan talk about astrology and that it seemed out of character for him, even though Reagan was into some other weird stuff. But then against that, or contrary to that, Colin Powell wrote a memoir just a few years ago, and he said basically that it seemed perfectly in character given Reagan's other quasi-mystical beliefs. And he even cites this specific instance with him when he remembers them doing it, because when they were about to sign the INF treaty, which is a missile treaty with the Russians in 1987, his office, Colin Powell relates this whole story about how his office in the military had this time picked out of 11 in the morning because that was the most optimal for the schedule and for the other negotiations that had to occur later that day. And then he was contacted by the chief of staff that said, no, it has to take place at exactly 1:45 PM. And after some back and forth and wrangling saying, you know, that's going to throw everything off, Colin Powell was forced to give in without them telling him why. And they changed everything so that the treaty could be signed at 1:45 p.m. And he didn't know why. And then a few weeks later, when he pressed the chief of staff on it, he was informed why. And he said that he was one of only six, he said a half dozen people within the White House at that point in time that knew the truth and knew what was going on. Mm. But Colin Powell said once he knew that, he said it made sense to him because Reagan had this sort of mystical streak to him, made him look more open to something like that. Not in like a new age, like hippie type way, but in a way that he was into, like, that he talked about, you know, his role and thinking that he was kind of like, he had a role to play that was sort of like inspired by providence or by God or something like that.
Right.
And that he was into like biblical prophecy and, all sorts of other things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that adds to the evidence against Reagan being oblivious.
Sure.
Raises some problems for those diaries.
Well, there's still a problem with the diary, but it also doesn't make sense because for the diary dates, it's like May 4th and May 5th, or May 3rd and May 4th, which is where he's basically saying there's nothing to it and we don't know anything. But on the same days, I'm pulling up New York Times articles for it was already May 4th, published May 4th, 1988. White House confirms Reagan's follow astrology up to a point. And right on it, it says, Washington, May 3rd, President Reagan and his wife Nancy are both deeply interested in astrology, the White House spokesman Marlon Fitzwater said today. And two former White House officials said Mrs. Reagan's concerns had influenced the scheduling of important events. So it's like, the diaries also don't make sense because the White House is publicly confirming, yes, it's true, the rumors are true, this is going on, but then privately, I'll just read the diary. So it says, Tuesday, May 3rd, the press have a new one thanks to Don Regan's book. We make decisions on the basis of going to astrologers. The media are behaving like kids with a new toy, never mind that there's no truth to it. So he was writing this on the 3rd, so that's what, like maybe a day before the press secretary confirms that this is happening.
Interesting.
Then Wednesday, May 4th, a short meeting, some talk about this astrology mess Don Regan's book has kicked up. Some gal in L.A. claims she's a visitor to the White House and that she gives us frequent readings. She even claims she advised me on choosing George B. for vice president. We've never seen her in our lives and don't know her at all. So one of the things is, I don't know on May 4th if he's referring to Quigley, which if it's If he is, then it's just flat out false, because she did visit the White House for a state dinner in 1985 and met and spoke to Reagan himself. Mm-hmm. However, there seems to, I found in some of the early like media reports that there was some other astrologer, because Quigley herself didn't claim that George Herbert Walker Bush was picked as Reagan's running mate based on astrology. And she never mentions that as a claim, but I did find some other astrologer in that time period who may have been claiming that that happened. And so I don't know if perhaps this could be clarified because there was some other astrologer in play that was making claims that, you know, maybe weren't true or something like that.
Right.
But either way, at least in the personal diaries, they don't shed any additional information on this, except for that the next few days, they're completely hooked on this whole issue. So May 7th, for example, after another bright day, but temperature only around 60 degrees, watch TV talk shows. They're driving Nancy up the wall with their gossip that we both, but especially Nancy, live by our horoscopes and won't make any decisions without checking the stars. It's phony, but the press is making a big phony thing out of it. So they're at Camp David while he's writing this.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's this weirdness in terms of the personal diaries and what's going on there, because I don't know if that's genuine. I don't know if that's been changed after the fact. I don't know if he's writing this with being conscious about his image and about what's going on, or maybe if Nancy had lied to him up to that point, which seems implausible, a little bit implausible.
That would be like gaslighting for a marriage. You know, by that point, they've been married over 30 years. For her to be conducting affairs at that level and not informing him,
right,
would be really bad.
Yeah, that would be like House of Cards type stuff. Anyway, so it seems implausible, but there is a discontinuity. And so you can understand how ultimately it's still sort of an open debate, because a lot of it ultimately is going to rest on inferences and this, like, he said, she said stuff, and which sources you put more weight on or which sources you trust versus don't. And ultimately it's like a lot of the people that are maybe like, let's say, professional historians, at least in some instances, especially if they're coming at it from certain approaches, are not necessarily going to trust the astrologer's account as much as they're going to trust whatever other account.
Naturally.
So anyway, so we've been talking a while, but we haven't gotten to the most important part. And I think we should address this next in this final section, which is, how exactly did Joan Quigley use astrology for the Reagans? And what did she do during her time in the White House? Or in other words, when people say, you know, astrology was being practiced in the White House in the 1980s during Reagan's administration, what does that specifically mean? And it's like some of this was confirmed, but some of this was confirmed in Don Regan's book, some of it in Nancy Reagan's book. But most of it, really, the most detailed information, of course, comes from Joan Quigley's book, since she was the astrologer and she wrote a very detailed account about exactly what she did, including oftentimes the specific charts and times with commentary about what she was going for with certain elections. So the main thing that she really seems to have done is that she largely gave dates for different things using her approach to electional astrology, especially focusing on things that happened the most frequently, which were things for like dates for press conferences, for speeches, for trips, and for other public appearances. We've already talked about the 1980 debate with Carter, where she picked either a date or a time which she thought would emphasize something in Carter's chart that was negative or that would cause him to slip up, which is really fascinating to me, because that means, I mean, just imagine like the historical implications for that in terms of one side using astrologers in order to get a leg up in a presidential debate, especially if that presidential debate had any, you know, influence on in terms of the outcome of the election. That sort of blows me away. That debate's actually a little tricky, though, because I was just reading a story recently about some controversy that happened a decade or two later, where it came out that some papers of some of Reagan's, like, or some of Carter's notes or preparation notes may have been leaked to the Reagan team in advance of the 1980 debate, which, if true, may have been an additional thing that was giving them a leg up, although apparently that's a subject of debate as well.
Well, yeah, but if you know the story of the Iran hostages and how there was a deal made that they not be released until the day of Reagan's inauguration in January of 81, if they were willing to do that, and that's a well-documented fact that that was done. So if Reagan's election people were willing to do something like that at that stage in the game, at what would have been the same, you know, week or so of Carter's of the debate with Carter, then pulling this other thing with his notes seems to be in keeping with other shenanigans that are on the public record as having occurred.
Sure. And I mean, even something like that, like picking the date for the single, having an astrologer influence the date or the specific time that's chosen for the specific debate, there's no way that Ronald Reagan is oblivious to that. Like,
no.
at the very least, he's complicit in it. And you know, putting Nancy Reagan in this huge role of picking and micromanaging like huge parts of her husband's campaign. But at the very least, it's like he obviously knows about it and is willing to use whatever he thinks might give him some advantage. Astrology just being one of those potential things. So the next thing Quigley details of other things just in chronological order that she did for them is she elected the chart for the launch of Reagan's reelection campaign in 1984. So this is the start of his entire presidential campaign for reelection. And that one's interesting because if I remember correctly, Quigley actually talks about this in the book and says that they wanted to launch the campaign earlier. But that she wanted them to delay, like they wanted to launch in like November or December or something, but she forced them to delay until January. So that's another one of those big things where we're talking about like a major change in the entire political campaign, the entire apparatus behind the president, like relaunching his reelection bid, potentially being delayed by weeks or months due to the advice of the astrologer.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, I can speculate. In 1984, Saturn's in Scorpio, where Reagan had Jupiter conjunct the North Node. And it's in January of 84 that Mars joins Saturn in Scorpio. And she might have been waiting for something like that. I mean, I'm just trying to think like an astrologer here.
Sure. Yeah, and I have some of the charts. Which we could maybe look at later if you want.
Yeah, I've got my whole file on them here, so I've got them all in front of me. So that's, you know, you can see an astrologer saying that. I mean, you were born in November of 84, so you know where the planets were.
Yeah, I would have told them to wait as well.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. I can see the astrologer's rationale. It would be, I think, maybe in the first or second week of January 84 that Mars would finally go into Scorpio. That would be this astrologer's advice as well.
Sure. So let's see, after that, Joan Quigley again is claimed to elect the times for the debates between Ronald Reagan and Mondale during the 1984 presidential election. So again, controlling or helping to pick electional dates in order to emphasize one candidate's chart, emphasize positive things in one candidate's chart and negative things in another candidate's chart. Mm-hmm. This is actually one of the few instances where she acknowledges really messing up at one point, where she says she screwed up one of the charts and that it backfired or something like that, and that Mondale did really well and that Reagan slipped up.
Does she say which debate that was?
Yeah, she does. She acknowledges it. I can look it up if you want, but I don't know.
Okay.
I don't have it written down right now.
Okay. I have charts for those debates in front of me. So I was curious which one was the slip up one, but we don't need to get bogged down in it.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we can put those up later. Let's see. She says that she selected the electional chart for Reagan's second inauguration. This one's a little tricky though, of course, because the Constitution says that the president becomes official at noon, so you have to hold the inauguration very close to noon. So she was only able to adjust it a little bit.
Yeah, but there's something interesting about the 1985 inauguration, because in this case, the 20th of January fell on a Sunday. And whenever that happens, the inauguration happens on the following Monday, on January 21st. This was the case for Eisenhower's second inauguration in 1957. And this was also the case for Reagan's inauguration in 1985. However, he and Bush did take the oath of office on the 20th around noon. And then the inauguration, the public one, was held on the 21st at 11:49 a.m.
I'll be damned, you're right. I didn't realize that. It's the same thing as Obama did a few years ago.
Yes. And I think there was something about the 85. I'm trying to remember the details, if it was because it was so cold or something, but the inauguration used to happen in a different part. It hadn't happened out there on the, where did they do it? On the rotunda or something like that? Not the rotunda.
The National Mall or no, is that?
Yeah. Yeah. They used to do it in a different place. And in 85, they changed the location. I don't know if Quigley had something to do with that or if it was the really cold weather. I'm sorry, I'm fuzzy on the details of that particular part. But I do remember that it was the 21st of January that the inauguration happened and the oath of office was a day earlier.
Sure. Yeah, so they did that's really interesting, because then the one she gives in the book then is the private ceremony that they would have done, and that's the chart she uses. So she adjusted it to be a few minutes earlier before noon, and she gives in the book 11:56:50 a.m. on January 20th, 1985 in Washington, D.C. So, and that chart, of course, is a little interesting because the Moon, there's a Moon-Jupiter conjunction at 25-26 Capricorn, and the MC is over there at 25 Capricorn as well. And it's almost like she adjusted the MC a little bit so that it would be just before the Moon-Jupiter conjunction rather than just after it or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. That's exactly what it looks like to me.
Oh no! I just adjusted. And that's exactly what she did. She moved the MC because at 12 o'clock noon exactly, the MC is at 26 Capricorn, and so especially if you're using like quadrant houses, it's the difference of having the Moon Jupiter conjunction in the 9th house versus having it in the 10th house.
Yeah,
and she basically adjusted it to put it on the 10th house side of the MC rather than the 9th house side.
Yeah,
brilliant. So you can see exactly what her rationale was, and that she's taking, you know, traditional astrological concepts. Like that's a concept that goes back 2,000 years. The idea of angularity, that the cadent side of the angles are less powerful or less active than the angular side of the MC or the exact angles. Mm. So she's taking what is at its core, at least, an ancient or traditional concept, and you can see her applying it for literally for the inauguration of a president.
Yep. Pretty straightforward ABC astrology to me.
Sure. So that was one of the interesting ones. That's probably one of her more prominent charts. Later, there's a little bit of debate about some surgeries. Quigley definitely elected the chart for Nancy's mastectomy surgery in 1987. There's some debate because Don Regan, the chief of staff, asserts that when Ronald Reagan had to have surgery to remove like a polyp in his intestine, that there was initially talk of delaying it from Nancy, presumably due to the advice of the astrologer, but it was something that was time sensitive that needed to be done as soon as possible. And Regan says that Ronald Reagan may have rejected the advice or whatever, so that they didn't end up delaying it and they ended up having the surgery as soon as possible. And that's actually something that Nancy gets really defensive about in her biography, saying there was never any delay and there would never be any delay over a time sensitive surgery or something like that based on astrology. So at the very least, we can say that, at least according to Quigley, the mastectomy surgery was elected in 1987, but whether the president's surgery was at all is a subject of debate.
Right. Well, in my file, the chart I have for Nancy's surgery comes from a news report, and it just says morning. When it comes to Ronald Reagan's surgery on July 13th, 1985, I have it that it started 11:28 a.m. In Bethesda, at Bethesda Naval Hospital. So I do have a specific ascendant for Reagan's surgery, but just a vague idea of when Nancy's surgery might have occurred in October 87, October 17th, 1987, 2 days before the economy collapsed. And Reagan's polyp surgery was, if I remember correctly, it was the same day as Live Aid. Yeah, it was the same day as Live Aid, which, if you were around in the 80s, was a pretty big deal. When I look at the chart for Reagan's surgery, it doesn't look elected to me. It doesn't look particularly bad, but it doesn't look like it was, you know, delicately chosen by a meticulous astrologer.
Sure. And like I said, I mean, she doesn't ever mention that, I don't think, in the book. So I don't think she tried to take credit for it. And I think Reagan himself said that whatever later date was initially proposed was not followed up on in the first place. So,
okay. So there you go.
And I mean, for most of these dates, one of the things we should be clear on is that for some of the really important ones where there was the ability to pick a specific chart or to adjust something if it's really important, like the inauguration or like launching the campaign, she probably did do a specific electional chart. But for the most part, for a lot of these, she was, I think, giving almost like a calendar, like a weekly or a monthly calendar of good and bad and moderate dates.
Right.
And Don Regan actually refers to this, and it's one of the accusations that he makes in his book, in his expose that came out in 1988, is that he was so frustrated with it that he said he had to have basically a color-coded calendar on his desk in order to schedule things that had one color, like green or something for good days, red mm-hmm. for bad days, and then orange or something for moderate days. And yeah, Nancy tries to take that. Issue with this, and Nancy tries to reject that in her memoir and say she didn't think that was the case or that she's never seen a calendar. But I think that was just part of her damage control, and there probably was something along those lines or in terms of what Joan Quigley was doing for them on a day-to-day basis, and that was probably, you know, connected with her looking at the chart in general, but also like moon placements, like, you know, maybe a good day would have been the moon Jupiter conjunction, and that would have been marked as green, but a bad day would have been like a moon Mars square, and she'd mark that as red or something, perhaps.
Right.
Just right. Speculating.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Don Regan actually gives an example of this in the book, and I'm not finding it at the minute, but he basically has a, oh yeah, this is what it is. It's what I'm guessing is he's excerpting of whatever Nancy had given to him in terms of however the information was conveyed from Joan, the astrologer, to Nancy, the first lady, and then from the first lady to the chief of staff. He kind of quotes something, and it says, late December through March, bad. January 16th through 23rd, very bad. January 20th, nothing outside the White House, possible attempt, which I think must mean possible assassination attempt. February 20th through 26th, be careful. March 7th through 14th, bad period. March 10th through 14th, no outside activity. March 16th, very bad. March 21st, no. And actually, this sounds extreme, so I'm actually wondering if this isn't, and this is one of the next things, this is actually one of the last major things that she advised them on, but one of the big things that Joan Quigley claimed and that seemed to be confirmed by Donald Regan in his expose is that Joan Quigley strongly advised Ronald Reagan to keep quiet for an extended period of time during the Iran-Contra scandal and not to say anything and not to make any public appearances, and that for the most part, not even to leave the White House, but to completely stay out of the public eye for a very extended period of time. And that this drove his staff absolutely nuts because everybody thought that he should address the scandal and try and dismiss it.
Right. Well, I mean, so those dates that you were just reading, that was for 1986 going into 87. Is that correct? Or was it earlier?
I actually have no idea when it was. He doesn't say.
Okay, because I'm looking at the chronology of events that I have in my chart database. And that was kind of working, kind of not. I can give you the chronology I have. It's October 5th, 86 is when the Sandinistas shoot down the U.S. Contra supply plane that's going to unravel the whole controversy. 6 days later, as the story is exploding, that's right when Reagan and Gorbachev are beginning the Reykjavik summit. And Reagan's kind of embarrassed by that story coming about right at that time. November 13th, 86, this is now over a month, this is about 5 weeks after the crash, Reagan denies the story publicly. But then he doesn't say anything until January 26, 87, when he gives his first testimony to the Tower Commission. He gives a first testimony on January 26, and then he testified again on February 11th of 87. And the commission gave their report on February 26, and then on March 4th, Reagan finally spoke to the nation on TV and gave an address. So that's the sort of the timeline of when he did talk about it. Everyone remembers, who was alive at the time, remembers that his testimony to the Tower Commission, the two times, January 26 and February 11th, the president basically couldn't remember any of the conversations or anything that he was being asked about. We were talking earlier about the suggestion that, you know, possibly his Alzheimer's was affecting him this early on. And if there's anything about the president's behavior that led the public to suspect this, it was his performance at the Tower Commissions, where, you know, I mean, definitely his age was showing that he couldn't seem to remember any of the stuff that was going on. Some of it was pretty important. So that's the deal. And it does sort of correspond with the dates that you were giving, although not perfectly. It looks like he might have had to speak sometimes at times that she wouldn't have advised him to.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I'm reading through this again, and it is talking about the release of the Tower Report and other stuff in this time frame. So we are talking about like early 1987 for this list of dates that is being given.
Right.
And this would have been basically before, in the last year, basically before he got fired, but before the chief of staff got fired.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So that makes sense. So, and the advising to be quiet in terms of the Iran-Contra scandal is interesting. And Nancy or Joan sort of takes credit for that in terms of that she thinks being a successful strategy ultimately, because it didn't end up ruining the president necessarily, or at least leading to a impeachment or something like that. But that sort of incident is so famous in terms of it that it actually gets quoted by Nicholas Campion, and he tries to connect it up with like an ancient tradition that goes all the way back to the Mesopotamian period from like 500 to 1000 BC. And he says, quote unquote, this is from a book titled What Do Astrologers Believe? And he says, quote unquote, during the Iran-Contra crisis, there were fears that unless Reagan publicly addressed allegations that his government had sold arms to Iran to raise funds for the Contra rebels in Nicaragua, he would be caught up in the scandal. Quigley drove the White House staff to distraction by instructing the president to do and say nothing for a period of about 4 months. Quigley was echoing the 7th century BCE Assyrian astrologer Belassi, who advised his emperor to, quote, not to go outdoors, and another astrologer, Manabitu, who cautioned the emperor to stay in his palace for a month. Quigley's work may have been ridiculed in the press, but it offers fascinating evidence of an underground tradition of political advice, which extends in an unbroken line back to the emperors of Babylon. Mm. So Campion, of course, who tends to really emphasize continuity from the ancient Mesopotamian tradition through the Hellenistic and medieval and later modern traditions. And he really loves finding instances of continuity for that. He really loved this episode because the type of advice that she was giving was very evocative of, or kind of had parallels with, some of these ancient 7th century BC Assyrian traditions, where that was basically the high point of state-supported astrology in Mesopotamia, was in the 7th century BCE, where you had 10 different colleges of astrologers that were serving the kings directly and sending reports and recommendations to the kings about what to do, and just finding parallels like that.
Wow, that almost sounds like I would have read like a Facebook group or something, like an astrologer's Facebook group, that kind of college.
Right.
When you have that number of astrologers all advising the same politician, I can just imagine.
Yeah, and in more ways than one, actually, because in some of them, in some of the cuneiform tablets, they're really funny because some of the astrologers like get into fights with each other and like disagreements about interpretation and all sorts of things like that. Some of that's actually documented in a really great book about Mesopotamian astrology that was just recently republished by a prominent astrologer that just died a few years ago. And I'm forgetting his name at the moment. He was the one that also wrote Holy Blood, Holy Grail. You know who I'm talking about?
I do. I want to say his name.
I'm searching it up. So it's Michael Bagent.
Bagent. I was going to say Michael Bagent. Yeah.
Yeah, Michael Bagent. The book was originally titled From the Omens of Babylon, but it's been republished by like Inner Traditions or something under the title Astrology in Ancient Mesopotamia. So it's just a great, great, great book on Mesopotamian astrology, and it details some of those funny like interactions between the astrologers or between the astrologers and the king and stuff like that from 7th century BC.
I love it. Astrologers don't change, do they?
Right. So that was one of the final sort of major pieces of advice that Quigley had sort of some control over, at least her advice had some effect over in terms of the administration. The only other two things I wanted to mention, actually three of them, because they're really important. One of them is actually really relevant to today because funny in terms of that, because she says that she elected the time for the announcement of Anthony Kennedy to the Supreme Court. So the nomination of who later was confirmed to the Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, who's still there to this day, that she picked an electional chart for the announcement of that nomination in order to ensure that it would go smoothly. And this is really interesting within the context of today, of course, because that was the sort of in the last year of his presidency, the somewhat late Supreme Court nomination in Reagan that everybody's pointing to now as a parallel to Obama also having a Supreme Court opening and wanting to nominate a Supreme Court justice in the last year of his presidency. And also the fight that had occurred over the previous nomination where Quigley tries to say that she was not involved in electing the chart for the previous guy that failed.
Right, Bork. Yeah.
Right, Bork. So there was a big fight over nominating Bork once he was nominated, and the Senate ended up rejecting his nomination, basically, or voting against it. And it was this big controversy and became like an early 1980s like meme or something like that, where they called it getting Borked because he was basically like sacked from getting the nomination or from getting on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that was a peculiar nomination in the first place. Bork was the guy who had basically fired the Attorney General for Nixon when the Attorney General wouldn't stop the Watergate investigation. So he had this very tainted history on top of some other things, and that was what prevented it. And it is interesting. It does remind me of today, because just like today, ironically, shoes on the other foot. Back at the time, Republicans, Democrats back in 87, 88, were saying, well, it's so late in Reagan's term for him to be nominating a Supreme Court justice, just like some Republicans are saying about Obama today. So some things remain the same as well, even when the parties cross their stories.
Right. I think like Vice President Biden had to write an op-ed piece in the New York Times recently where he was urging, people to allow the nomination process to go forward. But then he also had to sort of like refer back to and not dismiss, but kind of like address the fact that there was a similar situation in the 1980s. And he was on the other side sort of saying that they would not confirm anyone because it was so late in the process.
Yeah.
Anyways, nonetheless, so this one's really fascinating because Quigley says that what they did is that there was somebody in the audience with a stopwatch that gave the signal at the precise moment when it was time to begin the press conference to make the nomination. And this one's a little bit weird and ambiguous. There might be some cool history there because I found a media report where it has a camera that's set up at the back of the room, and they circle what looks like a woman who's sitting in the audience, and then she raises her hand, and then a few moments later, the press conference starts, and you see the president begin the press conference and the nomination process, and they say that, I mean, they circle that person who's raising their hand and like imply that that was the person. But then I was talking to Christopher Renstrom about this the other day, and he said that in his interview with Joan Quigley about a decade or so ago, that she claimed that they actually had Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush do it because he was a Navy man who had a stopwatch and always carried a stopwatch or something like that. And that he was actually the one, I guess, in the audience or somewhere in the room who was timing it and gave the signal that it's time to begin. So I don't know if that's true. I'm a little bit suspicious of that story only because of, it wasn't in the book, and I'm sort of surprised that she wouldn't have mentioned that if that was the case, that she wouldn't have mentioned it in the book. So I'm a little hesitant to take that, especially because it was a story that she gave towards the end of her life. And then additionally, in Don Regan's book, he actually talks about George Herbert Walker Bush and says that basically George Herbert Walker Bush didn't know how much astrology was being used in the White House until later in the presidency or something to that effect. And that when he found out, he uttered some like expletive or something like that, that Regan said was very strong for George Herbert Walker Bush at the time.
Right.
So it sounds like he was not otherwise being appraised of the subject, but also that he wasn't happy when he heard what was going on. But then at the same time, one other thing, like counterpoint to that, is that Quigley says close to the very end of her book, she's talking about how at some point in terms of George Herbert Walker Bush, that at some point she had been told, I think towards the end of Reagan's time in the White House, that they had a date set for the launch of George Herbert Walker Bush's election campaign to become president in 1988, and that the date was later in the week on like a Thursday or a Friday or something, and Quigley looked at it briefly and said she liked a date earlier in the week, like on a Tuesday, better based on some consideration. And what she says is that she never found out if that information was relayed to the team, George Herbert Walker Bush's team. But when the campaign was eventually launched later on, they did launch it earlier in the week on a Tuesday rather than the later date that supposedly they originally were going to use. So, she gives that story kind of like, not non-committally, but there's an element of that since she didn't correspond with anyone in that campaign. But if it's true at all, then it's possible that she even had some effect on Bush's presidential campaign in 1988. Who knows? And who knows about the story about the stopwatch in the audience? All we can say is that she didn't make that claim, and it's probably true that at the very least they did time the nomination. And the last two things that she did that are really notable and prominent is, one, she elected times for important negotiations between Reagan and Gorbachev, for example, such as the Reykjavik summit. She supposedly did some electional work on. And then finally, she elected the chart for the signing of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty between the U.S. and the Soviet Union in 1987. And that one actually even has the external confirmation from Colin Powell, who in his memoir gives that whole little story about how his team was all set to do it at 11 and said that was the best time for practical reasons. And then the White House literally like forced them basically to move it later to 1:45 or something like that.
Yeah.
And Quigley talks about this a little bit in her book because she was disappointed because she picked out the chart, which was set for like 1:45 or something like that, or 1:48 p.m. But then it ended up, because at 1:48 p.m., if you look at the chart, so it's December 8th, 1987, at 1:48 p.m. in Washington, D.C., you see the ascendant is exactly on Jupiter at 19 Aries. But what ended up actually happening is she writes in the book that the chart wasn't signed until like 10 or 15 minutes later, so that Jupiter had moved off of the ascendant into the 12th house. And she speaks of this kind of like being really annoyed or depressed because she thought it would be a really great chart if it still had that.
Right. Well, the chart for the signing I have from news reports is 10:10 a.m. That's Washington Summit opens. President Ronald Reagan, General Secretary Mikhail Gorbachev signed the INF Treaty, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, for some reason, from the Reagan archives, I have that the summit began at 10:10, but that might have been when they first joined together, not when the actual signing happened.
Yeah, I mean, because that
wasn't clear enough.
That would match, you know, if they got together at 10:10, then that matches what Colin Powell says was the original, what should have been the time, which is 11 o'clock in the morning to sign right. it. But that means that they got together at 10 and then they dicked around for like, you know, two or three hours until this chart came up with Jupiter on the ascendant that the astrologer had picked out that was passed on through Nancy and then through her, through the White House chief of staff.
Right, right. Hilarious.
So the time that Quigley gives, she says the actual signing time was 2:01:59 p.m. So she has it down to the second. So not only – what's interesting about this is that not only is the times – not only is she picking out the time, so the astrologer is in San Francisco, she's picking out the time, she's relaying those through Nancy. Nancy's relaying those through the White House chief of staff directly. But somebody is there also timing it and then relaying the times back up the chain of command, presumably back to Nancy, and then it's getting back to Joan of what the exact time is down to the second.
Yeah.
So that's a little wild in and of itself, that this is much more like elaborate than and involved than something you would think that you know Ronald Reagan could just be oblivious to.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Well, there are some things about there are some astrological factors to all of this that Joan Quigley could not possibly have planned, but are still really, really interesting. For starters, Nancy died on March 6th, Jupiter in Virgo. Ronald Reagan died June 5th, 2004. When Jupiter was in Virgo. And Jupiter had also been in Virgo in July of 1980 when he was nominated to be the Republican candidate, which, as you were saying earlier, is right around when Joan starts working with them specifically on the campaign, leading to her choosing the time for that debate with Carter in October.
Right.
Isn't that what she said? She didn't start working with him on his political stuff until he was nominated.
Yeah, exactly.
July 17th, 1980. So
she said she made contact in July or something.
Right. So Jupiter was in Virgo when that happened. Jupiter was in Virgo when Reagan died, and Jupiter was in Virgo when Nancy just died. And Nancy was born with Jupiter and Saturn both in Virgo. So that in itself was there's a lot of stuff going on right there in that part of the zodiac in this story. The other interesting thing vis-a-vis Joan and the scandal and the death of Reagan. Reagan died June 5th, 2004.
Could you say that Venus, again? It was breaking up for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ronald Reagan died June 5th, 2004. Venus was retrograde on the midheaven at 19 Gemini. Well, if you go back to 1988, of 1988 when the story broke, Venus was on its way to going retrograde in Cancer to go back to Gemini. And back in July 17th, 1980, when Joan and Reagan started, you know, teeing up, as it were, Venus had just stationed direct not far from 19 Gemini. So that Venus cycle in Reagan's political career is very interesting. And it even ties into the sort of the bookend between the beginning and the ending of Joan Quigley's involvement in his presidential career.
Wow, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it gets a little wilder. That same Venus cycle was in effect when he got divorced from his first wife, Jane Wyman, in 1948. And it was also in effect when he filmed the famous movie Newt Rockne, where he says the famous line, "Get one for the Gipper." Filming of that movie was between April and May of 1940. And that was a famous line that he used in his presidential campaign, and he would have filmed that movie during that Venus retrograde. Divorced Jane Wyman. The divorce was finalized June 28th, 1948, during that retrograde. And then again, all that political stuff, like I said, the beginning and the end of his relationship with Joan Quigley, and then his death in 2004. Those all occur in that same little Venus retrograde that went from Cancer to Gemini once every 8 years.
Wow. Nice. Yeah, that would be a fun sort of extended thing to do in terms of looking at some of this and looking at the actual charts. It's actually a shame that we don't have his birth time.
And it really is.
There was some ambiguity surrounding this because Quigley made a statement at some point in the early 90s, because at some point, she became a famous astrologer. And so the astrologers asked her to speak at some conferences. And one of the lectures that you can listen to still is she gave a keynote lecture at the 1992 United Astrology Conference, which is actually really interesting because that was a huge history-making conference, because that was also the conference where Project Hindsight got started. That was the conference where sort of the Kepler College was just first coming about, where the American Council of Vedic Astrology was just coming together. And so the other interesting thing is you have Joan Quigley giving a keynote lecture where she talks about her role in the White House. And she doesn't say a lot of additional things, but she was saying something around that time that she didn't want to reveal his birth time or something until after he passed away, because she thought it would be inappropriate, which I thought was really weird. But it later turned out that she was using a rectified time for Ronald Reagan of 3:43 a.m., apparently, from family information that just said that he was born early in the morning. So one of the kind of weird things after the fact is that she never really had a birth time for Ronald Reagan to begin with. She just had some general idea that he was born sometime early in the morning. She did have an exact birth time for Nancy, so we have an exact time for her. And then, of course, we also have an exact birth time for Joan Quigley herself, which would be interesting as a study to do as well.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll probably put some of these charts in the notes for this episode. So if anyone wants to look those up, they can in the thing that goes along with this. I'll also probably link to some different interviews and media segments and things that I found on YouTube to give you, some additional things that you can look into for research purposes. If you want to look into this, the primary thing I'd recommend checking out is Joan Quigley's book, What Does Joan Say? I'd also recommend checking out Donald Regan's book, For the Record, where he talks about, at various points, some of the stuff going on. And then finally, Nancy Reagan's book, My Turn, where she has that chapter dealing with the astrology issue. If you're looking for a more skeptical take on, but somewhat recent, it was published not that long ago, but that's kind of the argument against Ronald Reagan being into astrology, I'd recommend this book, God and Ronald Reagan, A Spiritual Life by Paul Kengor, which was published in 2004, which is weird because that's actually the same year that Reagan died. Yeah, and that's it. Is there anything else I should be recommending that I'm forgetting?
Not that I can think of. Definitely, I remember listening to that UAC keynote speech that Quigley gave in 1992, and I did find that quite interesting. So anybody who enjoys listening to old recordings from astrology conferences, that comes, I'd say, quite recommended, just to hear her quasi-official account, the most official account she ever gave of the thing.
Yeah, and I think I got that off the UAC website, so it's like UnitedAstrologyConference.com or something. Just search it on Google, and I'm sure you'll find it. The last thing is just, I know, I'm trying to base most of what I'm saying with a very few brief exceptions on things that were actually written in some of these books that can be cited. But when it comes to some of these issues, especially with Reagan's like history of interactions with astrologers like Carol Ryder in the 1960s and 70s, I'm sure there's a lot of astrologers, you know, that are around or still alive that might have additional insight or information into that. And if, you know, any of you, if there's any listeners that do have any interesting anecdotes or personal stories about that, I'd love to hear them in the comments section for this episode, or you can email me privately. I'd like to avoid, you know, sort of crazy, like far out, like hearsay and stuff like that. So I don't want anything too that's too far from like the original source. If you're talking about something that's like five times removed from whoever said it, but if anybody happens to have any interesting points of research that I've overlooked or perhaps is not public knowledge, go ahead and let me know in the comments section or send me an email, and I'd love to hear it. And that's it. So I think this is great. I think this worked out really well. This is probably one of the most extensive treatments, I think, of this topic, because when I was trying to research this, there weren't like a ton of good treatments of this issue. I mean, have you come across any?
No, I think the reason is some of it was sort of embarrassing to astrologers, you know, because Quigley did write this book. Everyone read it, but it was kind of something when I would bring it up with the older generation of astrologers that, you know, they didn't want to talk about too much, I think.
Yeah, because it's the old thing where every once in a while there's like an astrologer, and maybe that's part of the dynamic that I'm overlooking as well, is I'm familiar with the dynamic of sometimes there's like the astrologer who thinks they're like the intrepid astrologer that's going to take on the media and like prove astrology is real or prove that it's like scientific or something, but that sometimes they really just end up looking bad or like making an ass of themselves. And I'm not saying necessarily that Quigley did that in this instance, because it certainly could have gone much worse than it actually did. And she, for the most part, especially in that time period, like came off relatively well for what she was doing and respectable. But yeah, perhaps that was part of it, and there was some embarrassment surrounding it because of how she decided to, sort of become part of this story even more than she already was.
That being said, there is a success story in here. Reagan was called the Teflon president. So many members of his staff were indicted for crimes, you know, committed while being members of his staff. And yet he got away with everything, and his reputation only suffered very temporarily from the whole Iran-Contra thing. It really frustrated his opponents and his political enemies at the time that he seemed so untouchable, that no matter what happened, he seemed to get away, you know, untouched, relatively untouched. And so that also plays into the mythos. I mean, here he had the protection of an astrologer who may very well have guided him through 8 years of office out of harm's way, at least after the 30th of March, 1981.
Right. And I mean, either rightly or wrongly, the astrologer Joan Quigley in her book takes credit for that and says that she actually has a chapter titled Astrology Was the Teflon in the quote unquote Teflon Presidency.
Well, that's right or wrong, she gets to make that claim and go down in history because, you know, certainly if I had been, say, Lyndon Johnson's astrologer or George W. Bush's astrologer, I would not be writing a book about it.
Right. You know? Like trumpeting your successes.
Right. Or Nixon. You know, you wouldn't be able to do the same thing because their presidencies ended on a quite a bitter tone. So, you know, it would have to be someone like Reagan who really did get away with a lot. And right or wrong, she gets to get away with that, with taking credit for that. And that is the success story.
Sure. All right. Well, I think that's a great note to end on then. People can find all the show notes for this on theastrologypodcast.com. They can find out more about some of the you use like presidential charts and things like that a lot in some of your workshops and things with, especially with Venus and Mars retrograde cycles on your website, right?
Yeah, I do. And I'm going to be posting a whole bunch more soon, seeing as we have the election coming up. American politics is a hot topic, so I've got a lot of interesting stuff on American topics, American politics rather, coming up.
Excellent. And what's your website?
My website is nickdagenbest.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me back, Chris.
All right. And thank you to the listener for doing what you do and listening, and we'll see you next time.